So we're continuing on with the third take on the chapter on the meeting place between science and religion. And you're probably wondering about the buildup. I've been giving this talk because you're wondering why I would have TM sing about a rooster. there is a method to my madness. To set the scene, Holmes was brought up in a rural area in Maine. He was born in 1887, so the world that we know today is very different from where he grew up then. And being at a farm, he probably had a lot of animals, and one of the animals was a chicken. I'm sure they had many chickens. In fact, my grandmother herself had chickens, and that, you know, she was a little younger than Holmes, but I get the picture that that a lot of people at that time had chickens, and they didn't think chickens were too smart. And so there's a reprint of an article that was published in 1947 about a hen, and I'm going to be doing a little bit of reading from that article. But every time I read it, it made me laugh, and I decided I couldn't pass up talking about this at today's meeting. So he asks if you've ever set a hen, which most of us probably haven't. Is there anybody here who has set a hen? Set a hen.
I don't think so.
Have you raised chickens?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. All right. Two then. We're doing good. Anyhow, if you put up a chicken on top of some eggs, she'll sit there for 21 days, and then the eggs will hatch out. And so he asked the question, well, you know, what caused the hen to sit on the first egg? You know, it didn't have a certification program it went through. and it didn't, you know, there was nobody that taught it how to sit on an egg, and presumably it just knew by instinct. And he also says, you know, how does it know that it takes 21 days to hatch an egg, because there's no calendar in the hen house? And I'm not kidding you. This is all in there. And there's no sense of a weekend. You know, these are not union chickens. I saw a sign the other day that said, if you enjoy your weekends, thank the union. So okay, so they weren't union chickens, and somehow she just was born knowing that she was supposed to sit on top of an egg and hatch it. So Holmes says, well, that's universal intelligence that operates everywhere through everything. And she sits on the eggs. She doesn't leave long enough for those eggs to get cold. She's churning them so they're nice and evenly warmed and they develop normally. And he said, it's all instinct. She's never doubting. She's never questioning, like having a midlife crisis and going, this is all life is about. And probably doesn't do any complaining about her lot in life. She just sits there, and the eggs begin to hatch because the hen has been following her instincts. And she's probably not concentrating and willing it into being. She's not calling her friends and saying, would you please treat for me for this egg to hatch? And so, you know, we have learned a lot about the powers of concentration, and a lot of us think we have to will things into being, but the chicken doesn't. It can't read, it can't write, it's never studied philosophy, it's never taken the Science of Mind Foundations class. You never heard a hen, and this is a direct quote from the book, cackling about its sins or squawking to high heaven to save its soul. It appears that she never had a guilt complex and never studied how to be spiritual. She doesn't argue about whether she's been reincarnated 40 times. It might have been 40 more if someone hadn't wanted fried eggs for breakfast. I'm sorry, but that's what it says in here. I mean, you really got to read this book. It's got some gems in there. And so I decided, I thought Ernest Holmes was probably a little prejudiced, maybe because he didn't like hens, maybe had to clean out the hen house in the morning, which I understand is not a not something to look forward to. And so I did a little research, and I found out that hens have approximately 30 different calls. And so if you're walking around the hen yard and or barnyard and you hear all these various calls, they're actually communicating with one another. And chicks can communicate with whoever's sitting on top of their eggs before they're born. So all of these things have been discovered scientifically. I was not gonna take him at face value. I thought hens had to have more intelligence than that. Otherwise, why would we love eggs so much? So anyhow, he then gives us the image of her sitting there with this one idea of the eggs hatching for about 21 days, and lo and behold, they eventually do hatch, and she's not sitting there doubting. She just keeps them alive and keeps the eggs warm. She doesn't know if she's a sinner or a savior, or whether she's wise or unwise. She just does her job. And I thought, oh, what a great picture. It's so unlike me, because I'd be there checking the eggs every couple days to see if they were ready to hatch, see if I could hear anything, to see if I could feel anything, if I touched it, if I pushed it, would it push back a little bit. But the hen just sits there. And I thought, how amazing. So the hen, apparently, he says, it's not developed an intellect through which it can deny its divine offering, the gift to lay eggs, and it's not refusing to accept the creative power that it has. And then he goes on to say that we act more like geese, and we're always squawking and complaining. We can deny the power that we have. We don't necessarily go out and produce eggs. We may try to convince others they're going to hell. We have done a lot of things through confusion, through denying the things that are given to us, by complaining. And so we have a lot to learn from the hen, I think. And so he ends up that little article by saying we better get up and shake off the dust and get back on those eggs. After all, the hen is wise. So I did some more thinking about that, and later on in this chapter he talks about psychosis being a division between what your emotions want or your instincts want and what your will says. And I don't know how many times in my life personally I've done something like that, where I wanted to do a certain thing, lay a certain egg, and that's my intention, but I go off and I do something else. And I thought back on that hen, it's just relaxed about it. It's not trying to force anything. The eggs just come out. And I thought about that psychosis image that Holmes talked about as being analogous to driving with one foot on the gas and the other on the brake. And you never really get anywhere because you're always kind of at war with yourself. And I thought that was so true. The hen just is single-minded. It lays its eggs. It does its things. And it's not off wondering about other things, to the best of my knowledge. And then I thought about some of the treatment requests I get. I've been writing our treatment list now for 8 years. And I've noticed that sometimes people will write something very specific. It might be something like, I'm going to have a boyfriend next week, or I'm going to have such and such. And usually when they come out, I almost never... If you're wondering why they get rewritten, what I try to do is I try to use a more gentle, not gentle, but a less specific approach, meaning that things occur in their own timing. They have a timing of their own, and that it all happens eventually, but I want to make sure that we leave enough space that, our minds can expand, and maybe we're not going to have a boyfriend next week, but maybe we have more love in our life than we ever expected to have. And so instead of applying the will of, I want to have this right away, it's more, I want to feel loved. I want to know that I am loved. And so when you see me rewriting treatments, your statements of request, And sometimes I struggle with it because I don't always get the wording right, but I'm always trying to go for that feeling of just relaxing and letting it in and knowing that the abundance is there for us. So I pretty much covered everything I was going to talk about today. I know, we're cranking along. Usually when I give a talk, it's over with quickly. But one thing I wanted to recommend that you do is we've been, every month, at the back of these chapters, there's an affirmation. And I've been putting mine up in my bathroom mirror, and I read it every day. And it's really helpful. And this one is about seeing the perfect presence in everything. Does everybody have one? Somebody want to read that? Okay.
I see through all physical and mental obstructions to the one perfect presence within me. I see through all apparent contradictions to the one perfect being in every person. I see through all confusion to the one divine presence at the center of everything.
Thank you. Has everybody been practicing these? Reading them? They're great. And we'll be handing them out every month. And I think it makes a difference to have something like this. I think I'll hang this one up at work. And it just feels comforting to read it, because no matter what might be going on in my head when I'm in the bathroom brushing my teeth, looking in the mirror, I can always look at a statement like this and I can go, oh, it's all okay. I don't need to worry about anything. My day's coming together really well. And so I wanted to close with this incredible quote towards the end of the chapter. And it says, "Let each man have a spiritual outlook and uplift, and perhaps finally the day will come when our stupidity," and I think he was referring to the hymns, "will dim as the effulgent rays of that penetrating and mystic divine fire enter our consciousness. Then we shall find that we are like wayfarers ascending a mountain. We know the vista is there. We know that the eye may view the world as one vast plain and one boundless reach of sky. But not being able to look around the side of the mountain, it is only when we get to the top that we see things as they really are. Then we shall sense the representation in us of that divine urge which compels all evolution, all expansion, and links our own soul with the oversoul of the universe." And so it is.
So it is. Thank you.